Herzlich willkommen zu Saatkorn, deinem Podcast mit Inspiration für eine bessere Arbeitswelt. Hello everybody, welcome to Saatkorn. I'm super happy, as you can hear, I'm talking English again, which is great, I love that. And I have a guest actually from, I think he comes from Italy, he's going to tell us in a few seconds, but I guess he's in Barcelona right now, I'm not sure. It's Pietro Maria Picogna, he's CEO and founder at Pack, which is a very interesting company. We'll talk about that later. At first, I say hello, Pico. I'm super happy to have you here on the show.
Same here. Hello, Amel. Very honored to be here at your show. And yes, you're right. I'm half Italian, half American, based in Barcelona. But yes, I'm a mess. I'm generally a mess in terms of geographies. But yeah, and I'm happy to have this conversation with you as well.
Now, that's great. How did you end up? At least now, since you're still very young. So how did you end up in the HR tech startup world? How did that come?
It's a long journey. You're right. I'm very young. I'm 27. You see, still. Born in Italy. I studied everywhere in the world. I lived in many different countries and continents. And at my 22, I started this journey into the startup ecosystem. I went to San Francisco and I saw some interesting things happening in the HR tech world. And I was already, I would say, a bit passionate about the future of work. So I tried to combine this passion with the impact that technology can have on it. And I said, okay, let's go all in on this sector. Let's try to build something very cool on it. And it was a very cool journey. Now it's 3 years and a half that I founded the company with my co-founder, Jack. It has been a great journey and I'm still very passionate about HR tech. So every day I try to learn something new about how we can manage people better or like empower people in a better way.
Yeah, I think it's super interesting times right now. Also, given the development of technology, it's so super fast with the AI happening at this time now. It's super exciting. And tell me a little bit, how did you find out what kind of topic you wanted to solve with the pack?
Yeah, it's a personal story. But when I started working, I was 21. And I started working in a big financial institution, like a big financial company. And I remember that I was staffed in the CEO office and this guy was not even say hello to me in the morning. And I was very frustrated because it was like horrible working for them. And I started calling my friends and telling what I was experiencing. And everybody was in the same situation, the same position. I mean, companies weren't able to really create a purpose for humans, weren't able to inspire people, weren't able to give them a development path, a possibility to really become the best version of themselves. And I strongly believe that the real goal of working is finding the best way of ourselves. So I said, guys, I have to build something in talent development. I have to democratize access to powerful tools such as assessment, coaching, mentoring, to connect it with a holistic view about skills of people and trying to give anybody a purpose in their own job, in their own life. And so that's how everything started. And with this vision, we got also to a concrete one that is trying to give our technology and improve the life of 35 million workers in the next 5 years.
I totally like your vision. That's no surprise because on my profile on LinkedIn, I say I believe that everybody deserves the best fitting job and employer. And I truly think this world would be a better place if everybody had this best fitting job and employer. And to work on something like that, you don't have to ask for purpose because it's right away there. That's at least my experience.
No, I agree. I mean, like the best fitting job and employer build with you your own purpose. I mean, it's intrinsic in the way in which the job is shaped. So I agree with you. And I think that as humans, we're still working the same way since 150 years. We have to change something. It's the moment now to change something and revolutionize how we are seeing and how we see the actual future of work.
How did you come up with the name Pack for what you're doing with your company? It's an interesting name, I think.
Yeah, it is. And there are two versions of the story, the real one, and then one that was invented by a friend of mine, but that makes sense. The real one is that is the development pack. So like kind of starter pack of your own development journey towards your purpose. And that's how we thought about it. Then a few years later, a friend of mine came to me saying, but PAC stands for Pico, that is my nickname, and Jack, that is my co-founder nickname. And if you match them, it comes out PAC. I was like, yeah, you're right. But they didn't, I mean, we never thought about it, but yes, I mean, it's the sum of our nicknames as well.
Yeah, I like that. Obviously.
It's the first time which I tell it, I think, in public. So yeah, you're the first one listening to it.
Perhaps I'm the first to really ask for the name. I like the name very much. And I really like that it has a double meaning, which makes sense both ways you're looking at it.
That's cool. Yeah. I mean, it was fascinating. It came randomly, but it was absolutely fascinating.
How did you end up with the topic skill management then?
Yeah, I mean, I strongly believe that skills, I mean, I believe that the future of job of work will not be based on jobs or tasks, but on skills. So which kind of competencies I bring in when I join a company and which competencies I'm building while at the company. And I think that everything in the future of work will be based on what we actually know how to do and how we can improve the performance of the company through them. Starting from compensation, I believe that there will be compensation by skill, as we can see in the trends on online portals such as Fiverr or many others. I think that in the future, like the amount of skills and not the seniority, the hierarchy or something like this will determine how you're going to proceed in your own career. I think that skills will be the nucleus, the central point of any discussion related to the future of large organizations. And the bigger the organization, the more relevant skills will be. So knowing which skills you have, knowing which skills will you need in 5 years, assessing how the workforce is performing towards these skills and then helping them grow new skills will become even a more fundamental topic. When we are seeing a trend as TechWolf, Eightfold, Glowed, many great companies were born in the last few years on the skill management issue that is like a big, big cake that has to be eaten.
I agree. And I also think in a time where new jobs evolve and we don't know what the new jobs that will be there in 5 years from now are really the jobs. It makes it much more difficult than just recruit based upon job descriptions, because obviously they don't mean anything in 5 years from now. Yeah, technology will evolve, everything will change, and obviously the skills what somebody has to bring to the table or is able to bring to the table for a company is really what defines this person in terms of how important the person is for the company. So I would agree, the whole skill topic is super important, and obviously it's not a really new trend. I would say the last 3 to 4 years there's a big skill discussion going on, but at the same point it's quite complicated to find out what kind of skills you really have. Sometimes I'm joking and I say to my clients, probably LinkedIn knows the skills of your employees better than you do. So what's your perspective on that?
It's true. And I'm seeing many new solutions arising that, I mean, we were considering an acquisition of a company that we are still considering it. We're still looking at it. That promises that they are able to diagnose your skills from all the social or all the internet footprints that you left online over the years. And that's an interesting approach towards it, because it's really tough to assess. It's really tough to have an objective way of assessing. That's where we have built the technology for it. It's a central thing. I think that now there's a second trend that is after the skill management topic that was treated in the last 5 years coming from the US. Now we are in the second generation of this software of this problem. That is, how can we predict the future of skills using AI as a lever to get to a higher degree of accuracy towards our skill predictions in the future? That's, I think, the real topic nowadays.
I agree. Let's talk a little bit more detailed about what you're really doing. So when I'm on your website, which I am currently, and I will obviously put it in the show notes as well as your LinkedIn profile. So if somebody wants to talk to Pico, feel free to do so. I can see different solutions, but also use cases, resources, and obviously information about the company. Let's start with some solutions. There's four topics: skill mapping, skill assessment, development plans, mentoring, and coaching. Some of them you already mentioned, but perhaps you can give us a little bit more insight what you're really doing at PEG.
Yeah, that's correct. These are the modules of the platform. So when we are in front of a company, what we do for them is let them know which skills they will need in the future, and then assess the workforce towards the skills. So if we think about the role of the business analyst in 5 years, which are the most relevant skills, how AI and robots are going to interact with these skills, what is human, what is not, then we assess how the person is performing towards the same skill. So telling you, okay, this person needs to reskill, upskill, automate, hire, redesign, blah, 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 according to the score they have. And we assess in many different ways through AI, through traditional 360 assessments and many other things. We then build according to the difference between the skill map and the skill gap. We build a development path trying to get the person to a competitive role and to competitive benchmark of skills for the organization itself. And finally, we can also help with coaching and mentoring, given that we have a network of more than 1,000 partners that can really help people developing the skills apart from the asynchronous content that we provide.
How would you define PEG as an organization? Are you a typical software as a service business? Would you say so?
No, I would say that we are an AI change management platform with a recurring model of revenues based on credits. That's how I would define it. Then obviously we interact a lot and we have a strong intersection with a B2B SaaS business model, but we are in the middle in this transformation of B2B SaaS. We are already projected into credit-based, recurring credit-based model, performance-based that is more used in the US right now.
Could you explain that in a little bit more detail? Because I'm sure that a lot of my listeners, which are naturally more in Germany, perhaps think now, what does he really mean with that?
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a bit technical. You're right. I mean, probably you noticed that in the last year, we're talking a lot about the fact that SaaS is dead, no? And we see share price of very important companies. Think about Salesforce, HubSpot, or all this Figma. These prices are we're decreasing a lot, you're losing a lot of money and blah, blah, blah. General theory is that SaaS is dead, and I kind of agree that the actual way in which SaaS is run doesn't have a long future because it's based on a recurring non-performance based model by which I have a super long contract with someone. Imagine your CRM or your ERP, and actually, if it performs or not, if it evolves or not, it's not there. There are no metrics for it, right? So apart from personal taste. And that's why legacy providers, I think, will be disrupted by it. So what Silicon Valley is saying now is, why don't you try to base your model on performance? So I have a credit model by which, do you like our service? You pay X. These are your credits. If it performs, probably you're going to buy more of it. And you go on like spending credits on the platform. So our contracts have different services with a credit-based functionality, and the companies use them. They sign a contract with us and they use our services, our models as credits inside the platform.
How would you define then performance success within your platform?
Yeah, I mean, I would define it in two different ways. One is like real business performance. So when we, for example, assess skills or we map skills, we can tell the company, if you follow our plan, if you follow what we're telling, like what our software is telling you, you can save X money. So they have a real return, like a real ROI on the HR investment they made. The second one that is more business model related is basically seeing how they do it. So maybe they started with one skill mapping. So they mapped a role. If they go on mapping, if they go on coaching people, if they go on assessing, it's an assumption, but if they are using it more and more and more and more, I assume that they're liking it and that they feel that there is a performance after using the software or an improvement in any way. So these are the two ways in which I would define a performance-based software business model.
And these two ways would then also define the usage of credits.
Yeah, absolutely. There is a correlation between the two of them.
Yeah, right.
Strong correlation.
Get it. The mentoring and coaching part is interesting, but when I took a look at it, I felt like, okay, this is more like a network. It's not really your own mentors or coaches, obviously, right?
Oh, it's an external network of providers that work with us, not in exclusive agreements, and complete all of our value proposition. Because in many cases, I feel that companies are then like waiting for the solution coming from you, right? So if you redirect them to a partner, it's fine, but having an internal solution can really facilitate the whole interaction and the data conjunction between the like results expected and results achieved.
Yeah, I would agree. What's your vision? How should this all develop within the next, let's say, 1 or 2 years, which is a long time frame given the development of technology at these times?
I'll provoke you, but I'm thinking on how we can coach a robot on leadership skills. That's the question that I'm asking myself. But apart from jokes, I strongly believe that in the next 2-3 years, we're going to see a deep evolution of the workforce in which robots, agents, and humans will interact. Yes. And we'll have, I mean, many things. And companies will have to understand what the robot does, what the human does, and what the agent does. So how I see this project going on and how do I see the future of work is that companies will need even more there's tools to understand how, like, it's human intelligence, basically your human resources intelligence towards what you have and what you have to do to perform better. And so I'm thinking, how can you, like, the question that I'm asking myself is, how can we assess the complexity, the managing complexity skills of an agent while solving a procurement process? And it's a question that I'm continuously asking to myself. So that's how I see the product evolving.
Yeah, that's interesting. In terms of the development of PAC in terms of customers, what would your ICP, ideal ICP be?
We work with two kinds of companies, huge multinationals in their own country, such as Technogym, G Group, Loro Piana, and many others, or international brands in a foreign country, such as McDonald's in Italy, LG Electronics in Spain, or many others. In any case, large enterprises with more than 500 employees, men, that wanna really invest in transformation, human transformation and change management. That's our ICP. We now have more than 110 clients between Italy, Spain and France. We are entering DACH and UK. Mm-hmm. And so the goal is getting to 500 clients by the end of next year.
Wow, that's very impressive. And
Let's see if we're good enough.
Keep my fingers crossed for you. How do you plan to enter the DACH region? Do you set up a sales office here, or what's your strategy?
Yeah, absolutely. When we refer to DACH, usually it's a big assumption because Germany, Austria, and Switzerland are very different. So using DACH as a head for everybody is probably not the right approach at the beginning. At the same time, we have some strong advisors there, some strong investors that are helping us shaping the go-to-market, naming Thomas Otter, that is a common friend, naming Doris Tomanek in Austria, and naming in Switzerland Paolo Guida and Heinrich Zittelmeier. These guys are helping us shape our go-to-market. But the idea is to do what we did in Spain and France already, that is building a local sales force that can really deliver a message, followed with great senior advisors that can help in building credibility and reputation around the market towards our solution.
And at this point in time, how many people do work at PAC?
45.
45.
That's impressive. Getting to 100 by the end of next year.
And is it a remote company structure, or are you all sitting in Barcelona? I can't imagine, but perhaps it is the case.
It's a remote first company. I'm a youngster that started working during COVID. So like in office, companies are really tough to understand for me. So it's a remote first, because I think that if you want to attract the best talent in the world, you have to be open to remote first. Then like, that's very curious, because I thought that nobody would have ever shown up at the office. Well, these guys really want to go to the office. I would say that out of 45, we have always 20-25 people joining at the office in Barcelona. That is our engineering hub. And that's a great signal for the culture. So people want to spend time together, want to talk together, want to learn from the others. It's interesting. I'm a huge fan of full remote. I'm working from home today while I'm speaking with you. But I also see that if you build the right environment, Gen Z people can join you at the office and will actually like it.
For me, that's really interesting. So as you can tell, I'm way older than you. And
you
obviously,
said that. I didn't. You
no,
said
no,
that.
I think it's important for what I want to say right now. Because when you reach a certain age in your career, and when you spend so much time in the office, as I did in the past, it feels liberating to really work remote, for me at least. And then on the same hand, I'm a CEO also of a company with like 450 people. And obviously, what I see is a mixture. And interestingly, there's a lot of young people who really want to go to the office. And at the end of the day, that's not a big surprise because they need the network, they need the direct communication that you don't have remotely. Yeah, when you sit in a room and really develop something together, it's a different spirit. And so for me, it's interesting that you say, yeah, it's remote first, but then again, a lot of our people, and I assume most of them will be Gen Z people, I think you mentioned it, that they like to go to the office. To me, it's not so surprising. So the great mix, I think at the end of the day, is the right thing to just provide.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't expect it. I mean, I wasn't sure as you are. I really thought that after COVID, all the companies would have been remote.
Yeah.
But that was a mistake. And I'm happy to see the guys at the office because I like going to the office sometimes. So I like going there and see somebody and have fun with them. So yeah, you're right. I didn't expect it a few years ago when I founded the company.
And how's your financial situation? I think you just did the Series A, is that correct?
Yeah, we skipped the seed round, actually. So I would call it a Series A. But yes, I mean, when we started, I have to tell you the truth, we were first-time founders in a very complex industry that is generally slower than many others because HR in large enterprise is not the fastest industry ever. We are overperforming any company in this sector, but at the same time, it's not the fanciest, coolest, and fastest industry ever. So we started and we raised a little pre-seed, 500K in Italy, from Italian and American investors, angels investors, I would call it. Then we received a lot of offers from funds to run a seed round, but we weren't sure. So we bootstrapped the company again, and we got to profitability. When we got to profitability, two important funds named Rialto Ventures, led by Alessandro Profumo, and Acadian Ventures, led by Thomas Otter, Jason Corsell, and David Clark, decided to join. So we raised 5.8 million euros Series A round, and now we raised additional capital, but that's undisclosed. So I'm not ready to share yet.
All right. So keep my fingers crossed for the next month and years to come. And it's really a pleasure talking to you. Given the time, I already come to my last question for this session. Perhaps we talk in a year or so again, because I'm curious what happened then with tech in a year from now. But as you know, Zartcorn has a claim inspiration for a better working world. And obviously, somebody like you who in such a young age had already so many experiences. What inspired you lately?
Many thanks. But if I have to take an example, I tell you a personal story and I'll tell you about a book and a personal one. I was the president, and it was 2020. I was the president of the consulting club of my university.
Yeah.
It was a very prestigious one, and I was running it. And I read a book that has No Rules Rules by Reed Hastings and Irwin Meyer, that was basically telling that everything that I learned about management, leadership, and something like that was bullshit. And so what I tried to do was to change the culture of this consulting club, to change the organization and stuff like that, to really have an impact. And I saw it. I saw the impact. And I felt so inspired of seeing the real impact that you can have on people when you decide to change things, that you decide to run change management processes, you change the paradigm. That I said, I want to make it for a living. So that's what inspired me.
That's what you do.
Yeah, exactly.
Great. Thanks for sharing your story and Pak's story so far with Zatkwan. It was really a pleasure talking to you. So I wish you all the best. And I just say thank you and talk to you soon.
Thanks to you, Caro. And as always, keep pushing. Ciao.
Ciao.
So, das war diese Saatkorn-Podcast-Episode. Ich hoffe, die hat Spaß gemacht und sie hat dir gefallen. Bevor ich jetzt hier rausgehe, noch ein kleiner Tipp für dich. Abonniere doch kostenlos meinen Saatkorn-Newsletter. Dann gibt es jeden Sonntag alle Podcasts, alle News, alle Artikel, alle Verlosungen, alles, was ich auf Saatkorn so mache, gratis in dein Mailpostfach und du hast bequem alles an einem Ort und verpasst nichts mehr. Das Ganze kostet, wie gesagt, nichts. Den Link zum Abo gibt's in den Shownotes. Würde mich freuen, wenn wir uns da wieder treffen. Ganz lieben Dank und bis bald. Ciao.